Welcome to The Cauldron, a podcast hosted by Ed Bolden Greer, the creator of Ravensvale. In each episode, Ed will have free-flowing conversations about horror, life, culture, and personal growth. Expect to hear from storytellers, authors, horror experts, life gurus, thought leaders, and influencers. The Cauldron is a place where concoctions of a lot of ideas are brewed down to potions that are sometimes important and useful, sometimes eccentric and bizarre, but always just what you need. The Cauldron podcast may contain explicit language and thematic elements not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, hey there, family. Welcome back to another episode of the Ravensvale Cauldron. I'm your host, Ed Bolden Greer, and this is my co-host, Jacob Gardner, a.k.a. Freddy Cat.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Well, Jacob, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic.
Great. Jacob, I've noticed you've been getting a little jumpy the closer we get to the date of the paranormal investigation at the school. I've just been noticing you jumping.
Dude, fuck and- you. Honestly, I swear, I was, what was it, Monday night, Tuesday night?
Sunday night.
I am finishing up massaging my clients, right? And I am listening to a podcast, so my headphones are in. I thought that Ed was in the classroom because you were teaching a course that weekend. Right.
Class was over.
And I am facing towards a wall, signing off on the services, just doing some paperwork. Ed quietly, because you also didn't have shoes on. No way for me to have any inclination that he was behind me. And while I'm in my own little world, he grabs me with both hands and shakes me, and I just yell out.
Also roared.
Oh, my God. And I just yell out in complete sheer terror, only to, in that split second before I could even finish my profanity, I hear Ed just dying laughing. Oh, my God.
It was absolutely hysterical.
My heart didn't stop beating till I was, like, halfway home. I was so scared. I was like, oh, my God, dude.
Unfortunately for Jacob, he gets this from most of the staff.
That was the worst anybody's gotten me, hands down.
I'm so proud of myself. So, Jacob, you received an anonymous email from one of our listeners recently who identified as Navajo, and they were discussing the episode where we talked about skinwalkers. They had some information they shared with you, some details. I want to remind our listeners that while we're going to discuss the details of this a little bit, it's really setting us up for another conversation on skinwalkers later down the road.
Yeah.
We're committed to respecting our listeners' anonymity and the rich cultural heritage that the Navajo people have. And so we want to treat this with respect, first and foremost. But Jacob, can you tell us a little bit about what went on? It was a very long document that was sent.
Yeah, so while doing research for the skinwalker episode, I got into contact with a member of the Navajo tribe via Reddit, and I did change his response. He sent me an account that his family has talked about for a very long time. It's kind of like his version of a family ghost story. But again, if you guys remember in the episode where we talked about skinwalkers, it's considered very taboo for non-tribe members to discuss this with tribe members. So for the sake of anonymity, I've left this person's username out, and the story that they sent, I changed a lot of the pronouns to really neutral pronouns, like my uncle or my grandfather. It was a very long document. I will give you a short and condensed version of it. But essentially, this person reports that back in about the like 80s or so, his family, obviously living on the Navajo reservation, had an experience with what they are convinced was a skinwalker. The grandfather definitely believes that it was. But an aunt and uncle of the person that I was corresponding with gave me an account of late at night, they heard somebody breaking in or rummaging around their truck. They go out to then confront the person that is rummaging around in their truck, and what they see is not human, per se. It has a very gnarled appearance. It was taller than the truck cab from the email that he sent me. And his uncle ran back into the house to grab a rifle to then shoot it, right? The creature stopped rummaging through the truck and started walking towards his uncle, completely unfazed by the fact that it had a weapon drawn on him. The uncle then reported that he tried pulling the trigger and it just would not fire. It wasn't like the safety was on. It was that the trigger would constantly go back and be pulled, but no bullet would fly out of the rifle, almost like it was just inoperable. And as they got closer and closer to the uncle, the grandparents just so happened to be coming back from a church meeting or something like that on the reservation. The grandfather, having lived on the reservation for a while, knew immediately what this thing was and what to do. So he jumps out of his car and he fires a gun up into the air, and it scares the creature to hide behind a tree. He yells at his uncle, run inside, go to the fireplace, grab some ashes. And apparently the uncle was like petrified once he saw this thing shambling behind a tree. So the grandfather took it upon himself to run into the house, grab some ashes with a hot scooper, and then put it on the gun, and then grab some colder ash and kind of buff the gun with it while saying something. And when he ran out, he was able to shoot the gun. Now it finally worked. Well, they struck the creature and it started to run off. The aunt and the grandmother ran back into the house, and then the grandfather and the uncle got into the truck and started chasing after it. The uncle said that any time, because it was a very bumpy road, it's not like it's a paved road on the reservations, every time the headlights would hit the creature, he said it looked like a woman, but this woman was running on all fours and outrunning a truck. Well, they ended up stopping before they got to this ditch that was like 20 feet deep, and the grandfather jumped out of the car and started yelling at this creature, calling it by name, saying, I know who you are. I know what you're doing. Leave my family alone. And then apparently a couple days later, a woman that was part of the reservation was found dead under mysterious circumstances, and nobody reported seeing this creature again.
That's kind of spooky.
Dude, it's horrifying. Yeah. It's horrifying. And there's even more details that I left out. We'll go over it in another episode, but I thought, like, what a cool little crossover. I'm going to check my responses, because once we release that episode, because at the time I don't think we've released it yet. When we release the episode, I'm going to send it to this person and get their feedback on it as well.
Yeah. That's just, I find Skinwalker so terrifying.
You know what's even more terrifying? Something that we just read about in the news today. When our listeners listen to this, it will have already happened for a week or two, but I woke up this morning. Ed, did you see what happened in Baltimore?
Yeah, it's absolutely horrible. I woke up this morning to people texting me, and it was all over my news feed. And I've talked to other members of our staff about it.
Golly.
You know, I do want to say, on behalf of the entire team of the Ravensvale Podcast Network, we want to express our deepest sympathies to those affected by the Baltimore Bridge collapse. This is a heartbreaking event, and our thoughts are with the victims and their families and all those impacted. It's one of our greatest fears. Jacob and I were talking this morning about being stuck where you can't get away.
Yeah.
In times like these, it's important to remember that as a nation, we are a community, and we urge everyone to lend a hand where they can, whether it's through donations or volunteering or simply reaching out to those in need. We also want to express our gratitude to the first responders and rescue teams who are putting their lives on the line.
Yeah.
This is a water event, and so it becomes even more deadly. Your bravery and dedication are just truly inspiring to us.
Yeah, I think they said that the water is like 2 degrees right now, too.
And the way I feel about cold, you know, that's just not acceptable.
Oh, God.
But we are just simply devastated. And we hope to hear from some of our friends and family that live in that area really soon.
Yeah.
Well, family, join us next week when we'll be peeling back the layers of a psychological thriller called Dr. Jekyll, starring the versatile Eddie Izzard. This film is a modern-day take on the classic novella by Robert Louis Stevenson.
And I think I speak for everybody when I say this, but we were really honored to be chosen by Hammer Films to preview this film before its worldwide release. We held a watch party here at the G-Spot last Tuesday with the entire Small Raven Media and Ravensville Podcast Network editorial team. We had pizza, we had some beer, it was great, and we were on a psychological trip, to put it lightly. So make sure you catch next week's episode to learn more about this polarizing film. It was really good.
It was. Jacob, are you ready for your would you rather question?
Sure am. Let's do it.
So I know how much you like to eat, Jacob.
Oh, I love it, man.
And I know you really like to cook.
Oh, yeah.
So that's where I pointed my question today. Would you rather live in a world where all food is dispensed through a vending machine with unlimited credit? In other words, it doesn't cost you anything.
Okay.
But you never get to cook again.
Ew.
Or have the skills of a gourmet chef, but you can actually only cook with the ingredients that you grow yourself. Free food.
Yeah.
Didn't say tasted good or bad. Or be a gourmet chef and cook anything you want as long as you grow it yourself.
I'm definitely going to have to go with the latter one, man. Like, I don't know if it's a love language or what, but the way I show somebody I really care about them is to cook something for them. And I think that that would, like, have some compound meaning. If not only did I cook something for somebody, I was like, by the way, I grew this myself. So I'm going to go with the latter one.
Okay.
All right. I got you one. You ready?
Yeah.
Would you rather have the power to instantly heal any injury or illness in others, but you feel their pain for the duration of the healing, or be able to transfer any of your pain to a willing participant without harm?
God, Jacob, that's really hard for me.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, I first want to go in and say, oh, I want to heal everybody, you know. And I look at the second part of that question and I think, well, probably Jacob and Jared would be willing to take my pain. Maybe Donna, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that I'd be willing to give that pain away, you know. I think I'm going to have to probably do what you expected me to do and go with the first part. But, you know, I love the idea of being able to heal people, right? And to take away their illnesses and pain. So I have to say that one. I want to say it with a caveat, though.
Okay.
I would hate having to make a decision on who I healed.
Yeah, you would be busy as hell.
Yeah. And I doubt that I would want to go to sleep because I would be healing people. And so, although I'm going to choose number one, I don't know what I would do about number two. So I'm going to stick with number one.
I know exactly what I would do for number two. I would pay somebody, right, that'd be okay with being my pain sponge. And I would just work out and fight all the time. And then I would be in perfect shape 24/7. So yours is more selfless. Mine, I'm like, dude, I got a great idea.
Oh, I do want to remind our audience that we got just a couple of years to plan for Jacob's big 3-0.
Oh, God, yeah.
and I think he's already kind of decided that, you know, one day 30's not going to be that bad, but also he's going to be old.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's already started planning his retirement at age 30.
I'm hoping, yeah. I've probably got 15 more good years left in me. That's it.
April is National Stress Awareness Month. It's a time dedicated to recognizing the dangers of stress and promoting healthy ways to cope with life's pressures. Stress can affect anyone and can lead to serious health problems, including heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, depression, and anxiety. Sound like anybody we know at work?
Unfortunately. Recognizing the signs of stress and being aware of the symptoms, irritability, fatigue, difficulty sleeping, changes in appetite, Recognizing these signs is the first step towards managing stress.
You can do simple things to help avoid the effects of stress. Staying active with regular physical activity can help you manage stress and improve your mood.
Connecting with others and talking to your friends and family about your feelings and concerns also eliminates stress.
Yep. Taking time for yourself and engaging in activities that you enjoy and find relaxing.
And this is a big one. Learn to say no. Don't overcommit yourself and take on more than you can handle.
That's a big one for you. You've just recently started doing that.
Yeah.
I'd be remiss if I didn't say get a massage.
Oh, yeah.
Regular massage is absolutely the best source of stress reduction. It's recommended that everyone receive a monthly massage, and more often if you're experiencing pain and discomfort.
And seek help. If stress is becoming too much to handle, seek the help of a qualified professional. I know I see a therapist.
I see a therapist.
Hey, and it works for me. Does it work for you?
Absolutely.
It'll work for you too.
Yep. Remember, stress is an everyday part of our lives, but it doesn't have to control your life. During National Stress Awareness Month, let's commit to reducing stress and improving our health and well-being. In the heart of Savannah, Georgia, where Spanish moss drapes the ancient oaks and the air is thick with the whispers of the past, there stands a house known as the Davenport House. It's a place shrouded in mystery, with a history as dark as the shadows that dance across its walls at night. This is where our story unfolds, with a paranormal investigator named Alex McCall. Alex, a skeptic turned believer, had investigated countless haunted locations across the country. But the Davenport House was different. It was said to be the most haunted place in the South, a site where the veil between the living and the dead was worn thin. As Alex stepped into the manor, the chill of the unseen enveloped him. His tools of the trade, a digital recorder, an EMF meter, and a night vision camera were all at the ready. The house was silent, save for the creaking of the old floorboards under his feet. The first sign of the paranormal came as a cold breath on the back of his neck. There was no one there, yet the sensation was unmistakable. Alex's EMF meter flickered to life, the lights flashing erratically. He followed the signals to the grand staircase where the temperature dropped, and his breath became visible in the air. "Who's here with me?" Alex asked, his voice steady despite the pounding of his heart. The digital recorder captured a response, a whisper as clear as day. "Leave." Ignoring the warnings, Alex continued his investigation, moving from room to room, each with its own tale of tragedy. In the library, books flew off the shelves. In the dining hall, the sound of clinking glasses and hushed conversations filled the air, as if a ghostly gathering were taking place. The climax of the night occurred in the attic, where the spirit of the house's original owner was said to reside. As Alex entered, the door slammed shut behind him, and the room erupted in a chaos. Objects levitated, spinning violently around the room, and a figure materialized before him. A man in period clothing, his eyes hollow with sorrow. "I am bound to this place," the apparition spoke, "trapped by my own misdeeds." Alex, although frightened, felt a surge of compassion. "What can I do to help you find peace?" he asked. The spirit's voice was a mere whisper. "Uncover the truth. Reveal my story." And so, Alex set out to unravel the mysteries of the Davenport House, delving into the historical records and long-forgotten diaries. He discovered a tale of love, betrayal, and a curse that held the manor's owner in its eternal grip. With the truth revealed, the haunting of the Davenport House came to an end. The spirit found solace, and the house was at peace. Alex, with a newfound respect for the supernatural, knew that his encounter with the manor would haunt him forever in the best possible way. As he left the Davenport House behind, the sun rose over Savannah, casting a golden light on the city of the dead, where the living and the spirits would continue to coexist, each with their own story to tell. So, Jacob, did you do your homework?
Yes, I did.
Listeners, we're going to continue our discussion of the last five of our top 10 most haunted places in the United States list. If you listened to us last week, you know we had too much data to do in one episode, so we decided to break it into two parts. Today's first haunted location is the Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Renowned for its chilling history and alleged hauntings, it opened in 1829 and remained operational into 1971. Eastern State was once the most famous and expensive prison in the world. Known for its grand architecture and strict discipline system, Eastern State was referred to as Hell on Earth. The penitentiary's haunted reputation stems from its past. With a history of suicides, madness, disease, murder, and torture, it's believed that the spirits of the troubled souls linger in its abandoned halls. The Gothic Revival architecture amplifies the eerie atmosphere with vaulted ceilings and dark corners designed to manipulate the senses. Among the many reported hauntings, the most famous is the ghost of Joseph Taylor, who is said to wander the halls today. He was an inmate who murdered another inmate named Michael Duran in 1884. The reports say that he returned to his cell to sleep after he had done the deed. Al Capone, America's most famous gangster, despite his relatively luxurious cell, complete with fine furniture and a radio, Capone was reportedly tormented by the ghost of James Clark, one of the victims of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, during his 8-month incarceration in 1929. Although this story is also attributed to Capone's time in Alcatraz, it's not unreasonable to believe that ghosts might attach themselves to a person instead of a place.
Yeah, I found that last little bit about Al Capone very interesting because we did end with Alcatraz in the last episode, and we did talk about the spirit of James Clark. I didn't realize until you and I were talking about it before we started recording that spirits, especially if they've been done dirty by the living, can follow you, which right. is just terrifying to think about. This place, by the way, to me, is a little bit scarier than Alcatraz. Outside of the isolation that Alcatraz offers, Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia, man, I mean, the amount of sorrow and murder and suicides and violence that
evil.
Just terrible. I mean, it sounds like it was, from the accounts that I was reading, it sounded like it was essentially like the purge in one building. Like, people really just got to do kind of whatever they wanted to do.
You think it sounded like hell on earth?
Seriously sounded like hell on earth. Like you and I have talked about in the past, when it comes to spirits, there's a lot of reports of apparitions and imprints, which for our listeners that don't know, an imprint is, and this is my amateur understanding of it, an imprint is essentially like a spirit that is stuck in a loop, usually right before their untimely demise. So in some of the accounts that I was reading, specifically around cell block 12, where a lot of the violence was supposed to have happened, a lot of people that are investigating report hearing people running. You can hear their footsteps, like slapping up against the stone, and then running into his cell and then slamming the cell shut as if they were running from an attacker and trying to
get away.
And to me, I'm very sensitive to loud noises. There's something so scary about thinking that I would just be in a dark prison and then hearing somebody running and then slamming of a big metal cell door.
Yeah.
There's also one of the most famous ghosts that are reported to be there at Eastern State Penitentiary was a guard that was stabbed in the neck by a prisoner who had a illegally smuggled in shank. He apparently died relatively quickly. And a lot of people say that because he had worked there for so long, if you're ever walking around investigating, you'll see the guard just making his rounds, walking up and down the cell rows, walking across the catwalk. Maybe he's in the guard tower. It's almost like he doesn't know that he's dead. He just keeps doing the same thing he did for decades. So very, very haunted.
very terrifying.
Scary. Because here's the thing, similar to the Axe Murder House, yes, the idea of a spirit running away and then slamming itself in the cell is scary. What is chasing that spirit?
Yep.
Ugh. Got goosebumps just talking about it.
Our next haunted place is the Limp Mansion in St. Louis, Missouri, which stands as a monument to both the opulence of a brewing dynasty and the tragic hauntings that followed its decline. Once a premier brewing family in the area, the Limp family experienced a series of misfortunes and untimely deaths that have left an indelible mark on the historic mansion. The Limp family saga begins with Johann Adam Limp, who immigrated from Germany in 1830. He established a grocery business and later founded the Western Brewing Company. The brewery flourished, and the Limps became one of the top brewing families in the world. However, the family was plagued with a series of suicides. William J. Limp Sr. and his son, William J. Limp Jr., both took their lives in the mansion, 18 years apart, in the same room that doubled as an office space for the brewery. The mansion's history is marred with a total of 4 suicides from the core Limp family, contributing to its haunted reputation. With its sordid past and tragic history, the Limp Mansion is a hotspot of paranormal activity. Guests and staff have reported seeing ghostly figures throughout the mansion, strange noises such as footsteps in empty rooms, whispers, and eerie voices are commonly heard. Visitors often report cold spots, feelings of being watched, or even being touched by unseen hands. Objects are said to move on their own, doors open and close without explanation, and personal items disappear or are found in different places. A particularly chilling phenomenon is the appearance of unfamiliar faces in mirrors as if peering out into our world from another dimension. These occurrences contribute to the Limp Mansion's reputation as one of the most haunted locations in the country, drawing in those curious about the paranormal and the history of the Limp family. The Limp Mansion is now infamous for its paranormal activity, with claims of 9 spirits inhabiting the house. Betsy Burnett Ballinger, the official paranormal investigator and historian for the Limp Mansion, has recounted numerous supernatural experiences, including hearing a gut-wrenching moan and sensing invisible presence. The mansion has been transformed into a restaurant and inn, capitalizing on its eerie past. Despite the chilling stories, or perhaps because of them, people worldwide are drawn to the Limp Mansion to experience its paranormal aspects and delve into the mystery of the Limp family legacy.
The Limp Mansion is really, really spooky to me, mainly because compared to the other locations we have on this list, this one seems to just literally be busting out the rafters with apparitions inside of the house. A couple of them that are most notable, obviously William Limp Jr., who took his own life in 1922, and then his father, William Limp Sr., who took his life 16 or 18 years prior. Guests and staff members have reported seeing Jr.'s ghost wandering the halls, often accompanied by the scent of cigar smoke, which is what he was very fond of when he was part of the living. His presence is said to be particularly strong in the room where he took his own life, known as the William Limp Suite. A lot of people that walk into that room report hearing a very dull thud, as if somebody had just taken their own life and fallen. There's nobody in the room. There's also a lot of accounts of the Lavender Lady, who is one of the most famous ghosts at the Limp Mansion. The Lavender Lady is believed to be the spirit of a member of the Limp family. They can't really identify who it was. Witnesses have reported seeing a woman dressed in lavender roaming the halls of the mansion, often appearing suddenly before vanishing in the thin air, or maybe a visitor will follow them. They'll duck into a room only to go into the room with no actual exit and then realize nobody is in there. Some speculate that she may have even been the spirit of a former servant. Something kind of not so spooky, but interesting for anybody that wants to know, you can actually go to the Limp Mansion and take a tour for like $25, and they will give you a hands-on, really cool tour. You may even be lucky because some guests report hearing one of the pianos in the mansion's parlor. Despite there being nobody around to play it, guests have described hearing music emanating from the room, often accompanied by the sound of laughter or conversation. Some believe that it could be the ghostly echoes of parties and gatherings held at the mansion in its heyday. Maybe these spirits that are trapped there, even though they're soaked in misery and misfortune for their untimely ends, maybe sometimes they I don't know, relive a happier moment in the house.
Still party?
Yeah, they're still throwing parties.
I also read an article kind of offhand, but the restaurant that's there is really, really good.
I guess you could say it's to die for.
You're awful. Our third most haunted place is the Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary, often referred to as the end of the line, is a name that resonates with a chilling echo of the annals of American penal history. Nestled in the rugged terrain of Petros, Tennessee, this former maximum security prison has a dark and sordid past that has given rise to numerous tales of the paranormal. Established in 1896, Brushy Mountain was originally constructed following the bloody Coal Creek War, a labor uprising that led to the decision to build Tennessee's first maximum security prison. The penitentiary expanded over the years, eventually encompassing a coal mine where inmates were forced to labor under brutal conditions. The harsh treatment combined with the prevalence of disease such as tuberculosis and typhoid fever contributed to a high death toll among the prisoners. The prison's closure in 2009 opened a new chapter in its history, transforming it into a site of fascination for those intrigued by the haunted legacy. Paranormal enthusiasts and investigators flock to Brushy Mountain to experience the eerie atmosphere and to encounter the spirits that are said to linger within its walls. One of the most famous ghosts rumored to haunt the penitentiary is that of James Earl Ray, the convicted assassin of Martin Luther King Jr., who briefly escaped from Brushy Mountain in 1977. Although recaptured, the legend of his ghostly presence persists, with visitors reporting strange occurrences in the area of the prison where he once was held. Visitors and staff have recounted numerous unexplained events, including disembodied voices, apparitions, and physical interactions. The empty corridors and cell blocks echo with whispers and cries believed to be the remnants of the inmates' suffering. Shadowy figures and ghostly inmates have been seen, vanishing as quickly as they appear. Some have reported feeling touches or shoves by unseen hands, a sensation that leaves many feeling unsettled. Now a tourist destination, Brushy Mountain offers a glimpse into the grim past through guided tours, where the bravest can explore the very cell blocks and solitary confinement areas central to the prison's haunted reputation. The site also features a moonshine distillery and a restaurant, providing a unique blend of history, spirits, and, if the stories are to be believed, the supernatural. The haunting of Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary is a testament to the enduring power of history and the tales that emerge from places marked by suffering and tragedy. It stands as a somber reminder of the past and a beacon for those seeking to connect with the otherworldly. Whether one believes in ghosts or not, the stories of Brushy Mountain continues to captivate the imagination and stir the senses.
Yeah, Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary was a pretty fun one, mainly because I only knew of it via its connection to James Earl Ray, which was basically where it stopped. I thought that a lot of the tours originally, when I started looking into this, was based around just the historical significance of the prison. But yeah, no, it's haunted as hell. The one thing that I found really interesting when doing this, so a lot of people who don't tend to understand or maybe not know, Petros, Tennessee is a very remote area, hence why they built a prison there, right? And something that's a side effect of being put in a very rural area is that most of the members of the community that are of working age, men and women, that's like the main provider of income in that area. So many of the locals who have worked in the prison for generations, they all have stories of apparitions and supernatural events that took place through their tenure there. One thing that's really common with the voice recordings that a lot of paranormal investigators end up using is that if you go to like the medical wing, again, with all the forced mining that took place, they get a lot of recordings of people coughing, hacking up, from, I guess, what is it called? Black lung. Stuff like that. The solitary confinement wing is pretty scary, mainly because there was reports of them getting recordings of people weeping and sobbing, which is just, oh God. You know, I actually would want to go to this place, if I'm being honest with you, and I actually would look forward to seeing a ghost, and I hope it's James Earl Ray, and I'll flip him off.
Well,
throw some holy water at him and then flip him off, call it a day.
Well, Jacob, we can make that happen.
Hey, I'll do it. I'll do it for Luther Jr.
Our fourth most haunted place is Emily's Bridge. Nestled in the picturesque town of Stowe, Vermont, lies a quaint covered bridge that carries a tale of heartbreak and mystery. Now, this one's kind of sad to me. Known as Emily's Bridge, or by its official name as Goldbrook Bridge, this 1844 structure is steeped in local folklore and is said to be one of the most haunted places in New England. The legend tells of a young woman named Emily, whose spirit is believed to haunt the historic bridge. The most common version of the story recounts that Emily fell in love with a man and her family disapproved of him. Defying her family's wishes, the couple planned to elope and meet at the bridge at midnight. However, her lover never appeared, and in her despair, Emily is said to have taken her own life on the bridge. Since the first reported haunting in 1968, visitors have claimed to experience a variety of unexplained occurrences at Emily's Bridge. Reports include strange noises like footsteps, banging, and the tightening of ropes, as well as the chilling screams of a girl. Some have even claimed to see scratch marks appear on their vehicles or on their skin after visiting the bridge. Despite its fame, there's no historical evidence that Emily ever really existed. The tales of her tragic fate and subsequent haunting have been passed down through generations, blurring the lines between fact and folklore. Yet the stories persist, and the bridge continues to attract those curious about the paranormal and the legend of Emily's ghost. Emily's Bridge remains a symbol of the enduring power of storytelling and the fascination with the unknown. Whether one believes the ghost of Emily is haunting the bridge or not, I just really hope that if Emily is haunting the bridge, she finds peace someday.
I wonder if it was like a Romeo and Juliet situation, you know, where he shows up like 20 minutes late and he's like, ah, crap. And then I wonder if when he found out that she had killed herself, if maybe he did it as well, and their spirits are just constantly in this weird imprint where they are
searching for each other.
Searching for each other, but they're just like a spectral version of misconnections. There's something that makes me really uncomfortable because some of the covered bridges that you'll find online, including Emily's Bridge, it's idyllic. It's like beautiful, the area that it's in. I mean, I know there's a lot of people, especially around fall, that travel around New England to take photos of it. I wonder how many just casual amateur photographers have pictures, and if they really look at it, if there's somebody in there that they weren't expecting, you know? One thing that I thought was pretty cool when I looked into it, and it kind of reminded me of one of my favorite episodes we did, the Brown Mountain Lights, is that photographs taken at Emily's Bridge have often captured orbs or strange lights hovering around the structure. Some paranormal enthusiasts believe that these anomalies could be evidence of supernatural activity, while some skeptics attribute them to just the light playing tricks on people. Moisture from the water or something. I think that in some of the reports that I was reading, these orbs may be the spirits of that man and the woman kind of still chasing after each other. I don't know. And then one thing that would have really scared me is the reports that some people, as they're driving their car over the bridge, their car just stops working, and then they start hearing screaming.
Yeah. Our last haunted location for today's episode and our top 10 list of the most haunted places in the United States is the House of Seven Gables, also known as the Turner Ingersoll House or Mansion. The house is a historic colonial mansion in Salem that has captured the imagination of visitors. Its fame was cemented by Nathaniel Hawthorne's 1851 novel, The House of Seven Gables, but the house's own history is as intriguing as any fiction. Built in 1668 for Captain John Turner, the House of Seven Gables is one of the oldest wooden mansions in New England. It remained in the Turner family for three generations, witnessing the prosperity of Salem's maritime trade and the dark times of the Salem witch trials. The most famous ghostly resident of the House of Seven Gables is Susanna Ingersoll, a relative of Nathaniel Hawthorne's. She was a wealthy spinster who inherited the mansion in the 19th century. Visitors and staff have reported seeing her spirit, often in the form of a kindly older woman, wandering the halls or standing by the windows looking out as if waiting for someone long gone. The mansion is said to be haunted by more than just Susanna's spirit. Reports of ghostly children playing in the attic, the mysterious sounds of a phantom piano, and the appearance of shadowy figures have all contributed to the house's eerie reputation. Today, the House of the Seven Gables is a museum that not only preserves the history of the Turner Ingersoll family and Nathaniel Hawthorne, but also embraces its haunted heritage. Visitors can explore the mansion and perhaps catch a glimpse of its spectral inhabitants, making it a must-visit for those seeking a touch of the supernatural. The House of the Seven Gables stands as a testament to the rich history of Salem and the enduring power of stories.
This one was probably, even though reported to be one of the most haunted places, like in terms of consistently being able to spot apparitions and ghosts, this one scared me the least, mainly because it's like a kindly old grandma that's kind of haunting the place. A lot of the reports that I read was like, you're getting ready to walk across a hallway, and then the door just gently opens up for you, as if somebody was waiting for you to walk in, and then you walk into the room, and it doesn't slam shut, it just gently closes, which I would be okay with up until the point that if it locked, I would be like, I'm jumping out the window. You know, unlike some of the other instances where you read about apparitions and there being a smell associated with them, for Miss Susanna's spirit, there's a common report of smelling a nice perfume. She also was a big fan of cooking. So there's times where you walk into the house, or maybe you're staying there late and in towards the evening, where maybe that there was a, you know, an imprint of her always cooking dinner for guests, that you can smell something delicious and you can hear the clattering of pots and pans and cupboards opening and closing, not in a violent way, just like a busy bee, somebody cooking in the kitchen. But then you follow your nose and walk in there and there's nothing. It's just the sounds being trapped in there. Again, while the mysterious moving objects that are reported in a lot of these other places, like a chair being knocked over or a mirror shattering or something like that, that's all terrifying. But all of this just kind of seems like, you know, you're just vibing with a ghost. It's almost like having a roommate. I've had a couple of roommates that remind me of Susanna. You hear them moving stuff around and you smell them maybe, but then you walk out and you're like, where is this person? So I would like to go to this house.
I've had a couple of roommates that were like ghosts too. Yeah. Pretty creepy.
I would actually be okay with going to this place. I really would. I mean, it is haunted for sure, but it's not like bad haunted, if that makes sense.
Bad haunted.
Yeah, it's not bad haunted. I'm hoping that the school is not bad
Jacob,
haunted.
The school's not bad haunted, but you're terrified of it.
Yeah, I'd be afraid of it. You know, it's fun. Well, family, that's it for this episode of the Ravensvale Cauldron. I'm Jacob Garner.
And I'm Ed Bolden Greer.
We hoped you enjoyed this episode as much as we did, researching the top 10 most haunted places in the United States. If you've liked what you've heard, make sure to join us next week, because we're really excited about it. We're going to be reviewing Dr. Jekyll, starring the phenomenal Eddie Izzard.
Now, family, you adults have a few chores to do. Go on over to ravensvale.com and see about doing your chores on social media. Follow us on all the social media platforms that we've made available just for you folks. Like, listen, subscribe, and follow wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you don't mind, leave us a kind rating and a good comment. You can find the Ravensvale Cauldron podcast on your favorite podcast platform. If you haven't already, search for the Ravensvale Cauldron podcast. And again, make sure you hit the follow button to stay up to date on our latest episodes. Oh, and tell a friend about us, won't you? So until next time, family,
see you soon.
The Ravensvale Cauldron is a production of Small Raven Media. Today's episode was hosted by Ed Bolden Greer with co-host Jacob A. Garner. Audio engineering and sound design by Nick Devan at Nikki D. Sound. Copyrighted 2024 Small Raven Media. All rights reserved.